Welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you with the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And we know many of you listening probably are part of a small business. Maybe you don't own one, maybe you work for one, but regardless, some of the actions that are taking place at Colorado's Capitol in Denver are going to have impact on those small businesses. And joining us to talk more about that from the business perspective, we're pleased to have with us Rachel Beck, Vice President of Government Affairs for the Colorado Springs Chamber and EDC. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Shannon. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Well, you know, we're almost halfway through with this year's legislative session for the state. And today we're going to be talking about some of the proposed ballot measures and legislative priorities at the state level and the impact they have as they trickle on down through our local economy and business community. Because a lot of these, I mean, when legislators are voting on, they do try to look at what those potential impacts can be. So, Rachel, let's start with, a biggie, COVID-19 still impacting our business community. How are legislative priorities being, tailored to that reality? Tell us about some of the recovery and stimulus plans that could focus on Colorado's COVID needs.
Well, early on in the session, Shannon, we saw a number of bills, including some sponsored by representatives from the Pikes Peak region, to try and limit businesses' liability if customers contracted COVID-19 in their businesses, so long as the businesses were following all of the public health orders. And unfortunately, most of those failed. Now we're seeing a lot more focus on financial relief and stimulus. The governor had announced a $700 million stimulus and relief package. Some of those bills have been introduced. We're still waiting on a few others. And they've focused on a few different areas of recovery, including help for small businesses, children and families, and also some infrastructure and renewable energy projects in hopes of that. It's a traditional way of stimulating the economy, right, to invest in infrastructure and try and stimulate the economy through projects like that.
Do you think the folks, the legislators, are listening to the needs of their constituents, especially in the business community, as to what will work and what won't impart undue burdens at this point?
I haven't seen as much focus on businesses, on employers, as I would like to see. Some of our legislators are focused on other populations, but that's why the Chamber and EDC invests in the policy work that I and others do on our businesses' behalf to make sure that policymakers understand what the business community needs and what the impact of their policies will be. You know, there aren't very many business people that are elected to leadership and to positions in the Capitol. And so a lot of them haven't necessarily had to deal with issues of payroll, unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, all of those things that our business owners deal with on a daily basis and that can take a lot of time and have a big impact if rules are changed.
And you were talking earlier about efforts that were being considered, possibly, that would limit liability. It doesn't seem, at least we haven't heard, of any legal cases going forward that are trying to pin liability of perhaps death or serious illness from COVID on any particular business. Is it that the reality came that it was just too difficult to pinpoint what the actual cause might be, and that that's where, maybe they didn't need to have any sort of liability protection because of that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I asked the same question to our advisory committee, which is about 30 business owners, industry representatives, community stakeholders, and so forth, that really helped me and the Chamber and EDC board dig into all of these policies and make sure we've considered them from a lot of different perspectives. And what our businesses said was, maybe we're not hearing about a lot of court cases yet, but I'm still worried. Mm. And so I said, okay. Then, some of our representatives had heard the same feedback and wanted to be responsive.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this bill, Senate Bill 176, getting a lot of attention from within the business community. Tell us about what it is and what its impact might be.
Yeah, this bill is probably one of the ones we're most concerned about this session, and it does a number of things. It makes sweeping changes to Colorado's anti-discrimination and anti-harassment laws. It changes how we define employee to include independent contractors, subcontractors, and even volunteers. So it creates massive new liability and costs for businesses, for state and local governments, and for folks over whom an employer might not really have control or be giving direction to. It means a lot more cases would end up in court. The cost for the state alone, as estimated by the legislature's nonpartisan research staff, would be $6 million a year, and it would take 46 new employees to administer the changes in this bill. So we don't have a number for what it might cost the business community. It's a little harder to estimate, but that gives you some sense of scope.
Mm. Is the essence of it that it expands protections against discrimination to these new classes of workers? Is that what it does?
That's part of it, yes. It also changes the way that complaints would be handled. Right now, we have the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, which takes a mediation approach to resolving these sorts of complaints. And it is successful in more cases than not at resolving them. And it is free to the parties that are involved. A lot of the language in this bill would change that so that cases would go to court, they would have to go to jury trials, and there are a lot of legal definitions in the bill that are vague and poorly constructed, such that it would say that if an employee was offended by one remark at a workplace, that would be enough to classify a workplace as hostile and give that employee the ability to take their employer to court. So it's pretty extreme.
Yeah. I'm thinking about our newsroom and some of the discussions that go on there. We wouldn't last too long under that because a lot of stuff gets thrown out in terms of discussions. Well, let's just continue the discussion here on The Extra. We're talking with Rachel Beck, Vice President of Government Affairs with the Colorado Springs Chamber and Economic Development Corporation. And Rachel, I know some of our listeners, they may want more information and more in-depth to find out how they can get involved or get updated on these. Where can they go for more information?
On our website, ColoradoSpringsChamberEDC.com, there's all sorts of information. If folks want to learn more, come to a program or write to their legislator.
Okay. We're going to continue the discussion here on KRDO News Radio. Up next, talking transportation. Keep it right here on The Extra. Welcome back to The Extra. Our guest today, Rachel Beck, an expert in legislative issues. She's the Vice President of Government Affairs with the Colorado Springs Chamber and Economic Development Corporation. The Chamber of Commerce definitely branching out into some of these issues, like making sure that business voices are heard when it comes to the legislature. And speaking of some of the big topics that are being tackled. And it's not just at the state level, also at the national level, we're hearing a lot about infrastructure. But Rachel, transportation, what sort of discussions are happening about that topic at the state level this legislative session?
Well, Shannon, there's a lot of momentum this year to finally do something about funding our state roads. I don't have to explain to you or your listeners and what bad shape they are. We've got about a $9 billion backlog, CDOT estimates, in terms of road and bridge repairs that we need, capacity improvements, and so on. And it's a subject that we haven't made much progress on for many years. Something failed at the ballot a couple of years ago. There have been some other solutions at the legislature that have not been successful. But this year, it's a priority of legislative leadership and the governor. And a few years ago, we at the Chamber and EDC put together a working group because it was something that we heard so much about from our businesses who said, I can't make deliveries in the same day anymore. You know, I can't get executives up and down the Front Range. We need to do something about this. we kind of established some parameters around what we thought would be the best policy. And we've been working with other business groups from across the state who have similar interests to really advocate for transportation policy and funding that really will fix the problem and make sense and is as efficient as possible. So a couple of weeks ago, leaders released a 41-page document of what they're thinking in terms of some fees and some spending and so forth. And we've been analyzing that and working with that group of business advocacy organizations to try and make some changes. So a bill hasn't been introduced yet, but we're working behind the scenes to make sure that when it does, it's really good policy.
Because there are some things that have unintended consequences. For instance, you know, people don't think of the impact on the state budget when you have more and more cars that have fuel efficiency or aren't even reliant on gasoline purchases. For instance, you know, electric cars, you're not contributing to the state budget and transportation needs because you're not gassing up, and that sales tax on each gallon of gas is not going to the state. Same thing with, I have a car that gets great gas mileage, like 35 miles per gallon, you know, and sometimes on the highway even more. And for me, that's a great thing. I don't look at it necessarily as saying I'm contributing less to the miles that I'm putting on the highway compared to someone who has a, you know, more of a gas guzzler. So there are unintended consequences. So I know that has to be looked at. When you hear about big plans, like, for instance, this Amtrak rail plan that might do a lot for Front Range transportation, you know, is that something that you see as a possible solution?
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. And you'd said earlier there are federal dollars that are going to be available for infrastructure investments as well. So you've hit on a number of issues there, talking about gas mileage and electric vehicles and so forth. Most of our transportation funding mechanisms are really outdated, and they haven't kept up with things like construction costs and changes in fuel efficiency and technology. And when it comes to things like rail, I'm really hopeful that some dollars in the federal stimulus plan could be devoted to advancing the Front Range passenger rail project, which has been studied for a number of years, but in large part due to the price tag, we haven't made much progress on. And that's something else that we are looking at and trying to figure out how to put the puzzle pieces together. You know, if we're going to get dollars from the federal government for electric charging stations or for rail, then can we use the state dollars to go to other priorities? How does all that work together?
Okay. It's all about making sure that it all fits together. Rachel, can you touch on, because this is going to be a long conversation too, another big topic, healthcare. It's always an option and priority for legislators. We understand there is a proposed plan that would actually expand, I guess, some of the options for Coloradans. Tell us about this. And we have to probably take a break here in a couple minutes, so we can continue the discussion after that. But just kind of introduce us to what's being talked about.
So for the third year in a row, some legislators have introduced something they're calling the public health care option. And what it is aimed at doing is providing lower cost insurance options for folks who don't currently have insurance through an employer. And certainly that is a great intention, but unfortunately this is one of those policies where the devil's in the details, and there haven't been enough conversations about how to work out some of the operational details. So we have a number of hospitals and healthcare organizations on our board of directors, and they are very much opposed to what's proposed in this legislation, which includes some price caps on how much hospitals and other healthcare providers could charge for services. And what will likely happen as a result, you know, if you break your leg and it costs $5,000 to fix it, but the public healthcare option says you they can only charge you $1,000 or charge your insurance $1,000, that cost has to be made up somewhere. And what will happen is probably, according to some economic research that we've seen from a nonpartisan think tank in the state is that we would either see those costs passed on to other insurance policy holders, probably those who get it through their workplace, or there'd be cuts to jobs in healthcare, nurses, other healthcare professionals, that sort of thing.
We want to continue the conversation on this. We're talking healthcare. We're talking what's being discussed at the legislative level. We're talking about right now some of the opposition that is forming against it. We'll continue this discussion as The Extra continues here on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra, the show that connects you with issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And here in Colorado, there are several important things that are being discussed at the state legislature. One of those, health care. And it is a meaty topic, tough to get your hands wrapped around. But certainly, as we're talking about public options. This is a point of contention that's been discussed for several years, ever since Obamacare. Are there states that are doing this public offering, this public health care option? And why is Colorado then thinking that our experience would be different? Or is it concerned that we might fall into the same pitfalls?
The only state that has a similar option is Washington State. And they just implemented that, I want to say last year, recently in any case. And so that's really the only place we can compare to. The good news is we're actually doing pretty well in Colorado. Recent research has shown that some recent policy changes and have resulted in lower costs and more choice for Coloradans. And so we're actually doing better than the proponents of the bill might think.
Okay, so that still remains to be seen how it'll fly out. Do you think with the opposition, though, from healthcare providers, do you think it has any chance, or are we just talking about it because it's out there?
I do think it has a chance of passage. The House and the Senate and the governor's office are all controlled by a single party, and this is a priority for them. And, you know, we certainly support initiatives that would help to reduce healthcare costs and increase access, but we need to make sure that we're looking at the whole picture of what drives healthcare costs, and this bill is just looking at one small piece of that pie and really attempting to put all the pressure there. And as I mentioned before, when part of the plan is artificial controls on costs without actually reducing the cost of service, you know, we may end up helping a few people, but we're going to harm a lot more people who would have to absorb those costs or would lose their jobs because there are less dollars in the healthcare system.
Right. And we certainly don't want to do anything to dilute the quality of the healthcare that we have access to in Colorado.
Exactly.
Because, you know, that then has ripple effects all throughout, not just healthcare, but then economy, and then employers don't want to come here, and it just goes on and on. Let's talk about, so we've covered some of the current legislative ideas and proposals that are out there. What do you think is going to remain a priority in future legislative sessions?
Well, right now, air quality and renewable energy and related environmental matters are a real priority at the legislature. A lot of our representatives would like to see us move very quickly to electric vehicles and move away from coal and natural gas for our power and instead rely more on things like wind and solar. They're also looking at a lot of conservation measures, including reducing car trips and reducing the use of plastics and things like that. And so those sorts of environmental concerns I would foresee being a priority for the next few sessions.
And the Front Range passenger rail proposal, I mean, some might say that they need to do something to create a funding mechanism for that. Is that something that could be under consideration future as we look down the road?
Yes, there's a bill in the legislature right now that would create the Front Range passenger rail district. And so in a lot of ways, it would be similar to an RTD or another special district. but of course be a lot larger in size because the Front Range passenger rail would extend from Pueblo to Fort Collins or possibly further. And so that would lay the groundwork for the sorts of administrative and policy and funding things that we would need to do at some point in the future to make this something that we don't just dream about or have on paper, but that we might actually get to ride from Colorado Springs to Denver or beyond.
Interesting. But that, you said, is still in session. It's just a proposal, correct?
Still under consideration,
under
yes.
consideration, excuse me. So let's pivot away a little bit from state legislative issues to some local issues. Housing has been such a priority, a key thing, and a very difficult topic for a lot of folks trying to get into that first rung on the housing ladder. What sort of things are underway on that front that could be, I guess, avenues for people to get their voices heard?
This, yes, you're right, Shannon. This is a huge topic, not just for our local community, but in the state and even in many places in the nation. We are certainly not alone in struggling with affordable housing, including for a lot of folks who make a pretty good salary, have good jobs, and yet still cannot get into the market. So we're a little bit late to this party. Our prices in Colorado Springs and El Paso County have been more competitive than many places in the Front Range for a while, but that those days are gone. And so we are partnering with the Housing and Building Association, the Pikes Peak Association of Realtors, the Apartment Association, and other partners in the area. And we are meeting weekly to examine what the factors are driving those costs and keeping inventory low and determining what policies we can implement in order to do something about that.
And certainly the pandemic has not helped matters because as you get that flow in the cycle of life with retirees eventually perhaps reaching the age where they might want to go into a nursing home or assisted living or some sort of other communal living situation, those numbers were really depressed because of pandemic concerns about, you know, a lot of people felt it might be better to stay in your own home rather than to enter into a communal living situation for the very first time, don't you think?
Yes, and in addition, we've seen a lot of folks leaving cities and coming to places where there's a little more space, smaller places like Colorado Springs, so that's another effect of the pandemic. And that's, you know, that just illustrates why this is such a sticky issue. There are all sorts of contributing factors, from the price of lumber and people moving here because of a global pandemic, things that we can't control, to land use policies and other factors that maybe we can have some control over. And so we'll try and determine which are which and put our efforts where we can make the most impact.
Yeah, where they also won't hurt others. We know that's a concern too.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel Beck is our guest today. She is the Vice President for the Chamber of Commerce and EDC for Colorado Springs of Government Affairs. And she's been talking to us about a number of legislative topics and discussions and proposals that are going on, bills that could become law, as well as we're going to be talking up coming up about something that happened at the city level for the city of Colorado Springs. We just wrapped up a municipal election. We'll be talking about that as The Extra continues. Keep it right here on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra, the show that's connecting you with issues, topics, people that are important to you. And our guest today, one of the specialists from the Chamber of Commerce and EDC, Rachel Beck, who knows all about government affairs and helps work at the governmental legislative level to enact change that is beneficial or protect things that could be changed in ways that are beneficial to our community and to the businesses that have to survive here, that want to expand, that want to thrive here. So, Rachel, speaking of various levels, we also have the municipal level, and we just got done with a municipal election here in Colorado Springs. Now, it was an election that didn't draw a lot of voters, so when people listening hear this, they may be surprised. It basically worked out to, I think, about one out of every four eligible voters in Colorado Springs actually cast a ballot in this election. But one of the primary measures that was on the ballot, I think it was the only measure on the ballot, it was ballot issue one, and it did pass. So in that respect, they got the numbers that they needed. Tell us a little bit about this issue and why it was seen as important.
Well, Shannon, this one probably is going to sound a little esoteric, but it is very important to the community and our future plans. Our city charter had an antiquated 30-word limit on ballot text. So if the city was going to ask voters to consider increasing taxes or authorizing debt, they had a mere 30 words to explain how the money would be spent, what accountability measures would be in place so that voters knew that it would be spent as they were promised. So less than a tweet, and that's just not a great way to make policy. It's something that only Colorado Springs voters are subject to. No other city in our state has such an arbitrary limit. And polling had shown that when we consider future community measures like continuing and possibly expanding our Trails Open Space and Parks program, or TOPS, very popular local sales tax that's been devoted for nearly 20 years to protecting open spaces and parks in our community, voters couldn't understand the complexity of the program unless there were more space devoted to it. Similar measures like expanding our lodging and automobile rental tax, which is possibly the lowest in the country, certainly among the lowest in the country, and is paid for by visitors who come to our region. If we'd like to expand that and maybe pay for some of the impacts that visitors bring to our community and expand the opportunities for tourism, it takes more than 30 words to explain the sort of program that we might want to set up and what the components would be. So we at the Chamber and EDC led the campaign in partnership with a number of folks like Mayor John Suthers, City Council, the Trails and Open Space Coalition, and others, and we're really pleased with the outcome.
Right, that it passed. And so now you'll be able to have those more expansive descriptions in future voter pamphlets when it comes to... Now, these are for taxing measures. This did not tax anyone, correct? This is just changing the number of words that are allowed in taxing measures that are put before voters, correct?
Exactly. So like I said, you know, most esoteric ballot initiative ever, word limits.
Kind of like the Twitter of, or the anti-Twitter of ballot measures. Yeah, trying to expand that.
I think we can all agree, and voters certainly agreed, that more information for voters, more information on your ballot is really important.
Mm. And certainly when it comes to taxing measures, you know, the devil might be in the details. Was that why there had been that restriction before that was placed on it, is that some people didn't want the details to be out there?
Yes, back in 1991, I believe, before we passed the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights as a state, Doug Bruce, who was the author of that measure, proposed something to Colorado Springs voters that was a precursor to Tabor. This was a provision that he included in the local version that never made it into the state version.
Oh, okay. And so this is a relic from that era.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, congratulations on that passage. I know we're going to be talking to Mayor John Suthers next week here on The Extra, and I'm sure he'll be talking a little bit about that as well. Rachel Beck, we've talked about so much here. Do you feel like this is going to be a productive legislative session when all is said and done? Or is there, you know, still, I guess, the lingering effects of the pandemic that is causing inaction, perhaps?
You know, I hate to be a pessimist, Shannon, but I think this session will continue what we have seen in the last two sessions, which is a lot of anti-business legislation. There's an economic institute, nonpartisan think tank that we work with in the state that's added up those costs, and the bill to business is significant. So there's a lot of legislation that, quite frankly, I'm concerned about is going to hurt employment, hurt putting people back to work and make our business climate in Colorado less competitive. Now, that said, there are some bright spots, as we talked about. Progress on Front Range Rail may be possible, funding for transportation, and we are seeing some parts of the statewide relief package that will help some people get back to work. So we will do our best to advocate for employers, for workers, and help legislators understand the impact of those policies. And, of course, we can't do it without input. So this is my plug. Visit our website. Sign up for our email newsletter. We do frequent updates on what's happening at the Capitol and try and encapsulate it for you. My idea of a good time is reading bills, but I know that, you know, most people are a little too busy for that or don't find it as entertaining as I do. So we try to take the work out of it, do the research and analysis, and distill it down for our businesses.
Yeah, we appreciate that translation for, you know, us regular listeners who maybe that is not our idea of a good time to sit down with a 100-page bill or something. Rachel Beck, Vice President of Government Affairs for the Chamber of Commerce and EDC. If you'd like to check out more on their website, go to cscedc.com or put in Chamber of Commerce EDC. You'll get right there. And they also can be reached by email. And Rachel, I know that your email is right there on the website, so folks do check that out. And Rachel Beck, my thanks to you on behalf of myself and our listeners here on The Extra.
Thank you so much for having me, Shannon. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Extra on KRDO News Radio.